Hello and welcome to
Blog Talk Radio.
Eventually I'll get used to that. Hello and welcome to the January 9th edition of Speedway Digest, Thursday Night Thunder. I'm your host, Adam Jason Sinclair, and on tonight's program, Michael Mullally and myself will be featuring interviews and news from the Tudor United Sports Car Championship, the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, ARCA Racing, and more. Our first guest of the evening is Kathy Gannis. In Kathy's short career, she has already gained national attention both on and off the racetrack. In 2014, she was featured and honored as guest driver to race in the Susan G. Komen Race for a Cure race car at Tucson Speedway. The previous year, she was one of nine drivers chosen by Michael Waltrip and Peak to attend the Peak Stock Car Dream Challenge, the three-day battle showdown in Charlotte, under the direction of Michael, Mark Martin, Clint Boyer, Martin Truex, and Brian Vickers, was aired on Speed and Fox Sports 1. In 2012, she was winner of the NASCAR K&N Pro Series West Most Popular Driver Award, presented at the NASCAR Now Champions Gala in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the NASCAR Hall of Fame. She's also competed in the NASCAR Driver Diversity Combine and was a professional driver for the Rusty Wallace Racing Experience. Cassie has raced in numerous series, including the Quarter Midget Series, the INEX Bandolero Series, the INEX Legend Series, the ASA Speed Truck Series, the NASCAR Whelen All-American Series, the NASCAR Whelen Late Model Series, the NASCAR Whelen Super Late Model Series, and the NASCAR K&N Pro Series. This year, she will be competing in the ARCA Racing Series for Carter 2 Motorsports. Now we'd like to welcome Kathy Gannis to the program.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
First off, how do you first get involved in auto racing?
I first got started in racing because of my dad. He used to race at the local dirt tracks here in Phoenix in dwarf cars and modifieds, and I always hung around and wanted to race, and finally he got me a quarter midget.
I know you're planning on racing in Daytona for Carter 2 Motorsports. What are your plans for the rest of the 2015 season?
Right now, for the 2015 season, it's kind of up in the air because of funding purposes. I'd like to race the full season in ARCA, but if not, I'm going to be racing my Superlight model full-time down in Tucson and Las Vegas at full race.
I saw that Bobby Hamilton Jr. has been added to the Carter 2 Motorsports stable. Have you had a chance to meet with Bobby Hamilton, and how do you think he's going to help out the team?
I have not been able to meet Bobby yet. It's great to have a veteran working with me, especially since I've never raced at Daytona, and having a veteran like that help me out and to work with me with the draft and everything, and have a teammate that is experienced in drafting is going to help a lot.
What's your favorite racetrack?
I gotta say my favorite racetrack is probably the Bullring up in Vegas. It's definitely my favorite.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's just a short track, and all those late models get on there, and it's kind of like Bristol in a way. You have to shove people out of the way to get around them, and you don't want to be stuck on that outside because you're just going to go back to pass.
I know you mentioned it briefly, but how difficult is it to find sponsors in today's economy?
It's definitely really hard. We're still looking for sponsors, unfortunately, and with this economy, it's not the best in the sport to have such an expensive sport to try to find sponsors, but we're trying as hard as we can to find that sponsorship, and it's definitely really hard.
Aside from yourself, who do you think the drivers to watch out for are in 2015?
That's a tough question. I mean, I don't know where ARCA-wise. That's a pretty tough question.
What's your ultimate goal in motorsports?
My ultimate goal in motorsports is to make my way up the Cup Series and be one of the top competitive drivers situation, so that's been tough.
How do you feel about the fact that that Jeff Gordon is going to be retiring after this season?
Well, it's definitely hard to follow because he's been in the sport for so long and seeing all the changes going on in racing, but you also have a young gun taking a drive too, so that's going to be interesting to watch as well.
When you're not racing, how do you spend your free time?
My free time? I don't even have much of that. I work a full-time job, and I just got a puppy, Enzo, so I've been spending a lot of time with him, working with him, and he's basically taking up all my free time.
How much experience do you have at the Daytona Motor Speedway?
At Daytona, maybe 30 laps altogether in testing. Not very much experience at all. Maybe like on PlayStation or iRacing is the most experience I have in it.
Yeah, I went to the Rolex 24 Daytona, and the week before that, they had a discussion about the benefits of simulators. Do you think that actually helps out the modern racers?
I think it helps a lot, especially being on those simulators. It's exactly like almost being in a car. I mean, you can feel every single little bump that the track has. They do an amazing job mapping out tracks and everything.
I know you have an online campaign trying to raise money. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I have a GoFundMe account to try to raise as much money as I can for Daytona. So you can find that on GoFundMe. Just look up my name, Cass Aganis, and it's posted on my Facebook page and my Twitter pages as well.
And what's your goal? How much money are you trying to raise before the ARCA Daytona race?
I believe we're at like 40 or 4 or 5 thousand, I think, right now. So, I mean, that's pretty good. And we have a couple other sponsors that are throwing in money that have been with me, Manscapes.org and Wedding Hair Care. So, they've been helping out a lot as well.
We have time for a couple questions from the callers if they were interested. Were you able to take a couple questions?
Yeah, definitely.
The phone number to call in is 215-383-3681. Number again, 215-383-3681. Did you participate in the ARCA test in Daytona last month or this month? And how'd that go?
Yeah, I did. It went pretty good. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get any drafting experience, and I also went to the testing in December as well, and it was pretty good. I was testing my teammate's car a couple weeks ago to see how his car was doing. My car wasn't quite ready, so his car is going to be fast as well. So, I mean, overall, it went pretty good.
Which track do you think in ARCA, which track do you think you performed best at this year?
Probably one of the shorter tracks I do best on. Because I'm so used to short tracks, I'm not used to those bigger tracks. The biggest track I've always been on is Phoenix, and that's a mile. So I definitely have to say one of those smaller short tracks.
And which track are you most looking forward to? Is it Daytona or another track on the schedule?
I'm probably looking forward to Daytona right now, since that's the one I'm for sure going to be racing in. And I mean, it's Daytona, too. Not a lot of people get the opportunity to race at Daytona, so it's pretty big for me to be racing at Daytona.
Well, my co-host has a couple questions for you.
Okay.
What's your favorite part about racing?
What's my favorite part about racing? It's definitely the thrill of it, so being side by side next to somebody and trusting them that they won't run into you and wreck your car, and definitely getting that adrenaline rush out and just loving the sport all together. together. I don't know, you definitely have to love racing to do what we do.
What's one of your happiest moments in a race car?
One of my happiest moments is definitely my first memory of being in a race car and going out and winning one of my first couple races in a boat midget. That's definitely one of my happiest memories right there, and also spending time with my family, because my family is still involved in my racing, and it's just kind of like the whole family gets together when we go to the track.
The first time you ever wrecked, like, I don't know if you wrecked big or not. I mean, I hope not. But what was your initial thought?
Well, my first initial wreck was in a quarter midget, and obviously all quarter midget people know those cars flip pretty easily. And luckily I wasn't hurt, but I did do a couple rolls in it, and it was kind of scary at first, but you just got to get back in the car and do it again and push those thoughts out of your mind.
If you could change anything about auto racing, like anything in general, what would it be?
Gosh, I don't know. that's a tough question. I don't really know about that one.
If you owned your own racetrack, how would you get the fans more involved?
How would I get what more involved?
The fans
more involved? I definitely have the drivers come out and interact with the fans, because I'm one of those drivers who like to interact with fans and talk to them, and I think that brings an experience to the fans as well, instead of staying up in the stands and hopefully they get to meet one of their favorite drivers. Definitely get the drivers involved to talk to them and do kind of more autograph sessions so the drivers can talk to them.
Have you did any dirt track racing?
I have done one dirt track race. I would like to do more, because when I first did it, I was, I think, like 12, and I didn't really like it that much. So we just went the hospital route, but I definitely like to try some more dirt track races now.
So which do you prefer, asphalt or dirt?
I would definitely have to say asphalt right now, just because I've never been on dirt. I'm sure dirt is a blast for any fan, but I definitely have to stick with asphalt, because that's what I know.
Out of all the racing you have done, At which like point do you think you've learned the most?
I'd have to say when I was racing a legend, because those cars teach you a lot of car control and a lot of throttle control, and you really have to pay attention to what you're doing to be able to work those cars.
Well, it looks like we have one caller who's interested in asking a question. Let's see what he has to say. He or she has to say. Hello, and welcome to Thursday Night Thunder. You have a question for Cassie Gennis?
Yes. Cassie, this is Zach from up in Michigan. And I had a couple of questions. I know it's a big deal being a female and running at Daytona. How does it feel to, one, be one of, to put your name on an elite list of females to race at Daytona, and two, how can you use that to your advantage to help not only gain momentum as far as getting sponsors for Daytona and the ARC Racing Series, and also for the remainder of the season?
It definitely feels good to be one of the female drivers out there racing at Daytona, but at the same time, I'm just a driver out there, so when I put on my helmet, it doesn't matter whether I'm a male or a female out there racing. And looking forward to the following year in ARCA, I mean, being a female is definitely tough, because you have to prove yourself to the guys out there in the series. And it's definitely finding sponsorship too. That's one of the biggest parts to me continue racing.
All right. Thank you so much, and we'll see you in Daytona.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, we'd like to wish you lots of luck in your racing adventures in Daytona, and hopefully you have a good amount of people willing to help you out in getting there. And good luck for the sponsorship for the rest of the season as well.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on the program, and have a nice evening.
Thank you, you too.
Once again, that was Cassie Gannis, who will be driving for the Carter 2 Motorsports team in Daytona and in the ARCA series, and is hoping to race the rest of the season in ARCA as well. She also has some backup plans if that doesn't work out, and as she said, she has a GoFundMe account set up. So if you can go check out, go to GoFundMe.com and search for Cassie Gannis. I'm sure she'd appreciate your support. We've got about 10 or 15 minutes till our next guest is scheduled to come on the program. So we're going to take a few minutes to discuss the Tudor Championship race at the Rolex 24 Daytona, which was held last weekend. For anybody who isn't aware, I was at the event. I did a little bit of live tweeting there. I also wrote several articles for SpeedwayDigest.com covering the race. It was a great race. The temperature was a little chilly by Florida standards. It wasn't cold compared to other parts of the country, but it was definitely chilly here. It was in the upper 30s on Sunday morning. There was a lot of attrition at the race. It started out with 53 cars and ended up with only 29. There was a major accident near the end that shifted things around a little bit, but the first three cars were pretty much the first three cars for the last 12 hours of the race, and end up with the Action Express car finishing in the top three, with the Wayne Taylor Racing finishing right after that, and the Chip Ganassi Racing team finishing in first place once again. They have had lots of success at the Daytona International Speedway, especially in the Rolex 24 Daytona. And it's quite a feat for Jamie McMurray, who's one of the drivers for the team, who has won both the Daytona 500 and the Rolex 24 Daytona. Also had Kyle Larson, who was driving for the team, who now is interested in running in Le Mans and a few other races. And I think he's going to be very successful in all aspects of his career. How much of the race did you end up watching?
I actually didn't get to watch any of it.
Ah. Yeah,
I was so mad.
It was pretty good. It was, like I said, it was a little chilly, but it wasn't bad. The main problem was the rain on Saturday morning. That was just annoying. It was like a really cold rain with wind, and we were lucky that the front passed before the race started, because by the time the race started, it had gone from being gray and rainy and nasty to being in the upper 60s and bright sunshine. So it was nice.
Yeah, that sounds like perfect weather.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why a lot of the teams had, they had a really good first few hours of the race, and then when it started getting dark, it seemed like the bottom fell out of some of the efforts from the cars. One of the Mazda Motorsports cars, the one driven by by Tristan Nunez, who's a friend of the program, who actually be on next week, unfortunately had to retire roughly 8:30 p.m. The team car, driven by Tom Long, who will also be on the program next week, retired at 2:30 a.m. So the Mazdas did not have quite as good of a year as they were hoping, but they did end up leading the race for a short period of time on Saturday, which is a great thing. It's the first time that a diesel-powered car has led a race at the Daytona National Speedway. So that's always good. There were definitely some ups and downs for other teams. The team, the Falcon Motorsports team, who we've had on the program twice, they ended up not finishing the race because they had an undiagnosed motor problem, which is still being worked on at this time. Which is pretty bad. Nearly a week after the race, they still don't know exactly what the problem was with the motor. So.
Yeah, but those engines are like really high tech and stuff. So I mean, I guess I could kind of see it, but you know, they're supposed to be, you know, like super overqualified, and I mean, it's kind of funny, honestly. But hopefully, like, it figured out.
Yeah, hopefully we. My father and I actually had a chance to talk to the owner of the team briefly, Derek Walker, who's the big, he's big in IndyCar. He's also the owner of the Falcon Motorsports team. We talked to him basically about the IndyCar series, and as we haven't covered IndyCar on this program very much, I'm not going to discuss that at length, but he is enthusiastic about the future of the IndyCar series, but he has some reservations as to the future of that series as well. So, he actually thinks that the Rolex series, the Tudor Championship series, is a little bit healthier than IndyCar, which is interesting.
I kind of think that the Rolex series is going to take over. Like, you know, I kind of think that, and this, you know, I'm obviously not a future teller or whatever they're called, but I think that, you know, NASCAR kind of, as much as I hate to say it, kind of fading out a little bit, which is sad. And I think the Rolex series is just going to come in and just take over the racing world.
It has that chance, yeah. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to any of it today, but at Media Day there in Charlotte, they actually had a brief discussion with Jeff Gordon about his future, and he seemed interested in running in the Rolex 24 Daytona in the future. So he's already been in the race one time, and I think that if he enjoys it when he's in it, probably next year, maybe the following year, then that he could be the next big star in the Rolex series, and that'd be quite the coup for the Rolex 24 and for the entire Tudor Championship.
Yeah, that would definitely be something.
It looks like our next guest is actually on the line a little early, so our next guest tonight is Jake Griffin. At only 16 years of age, Jake has developed quite a reputation for himself on the track. With over 300 top five finishes, he knows what it takes to excel as a racer, having raced in numerous cities and states at such a young age. Jake's experience in the UMP A-Modified, B-Modified, Crate Late Model, NASCAR, and Super Late Model Rakes is surpassed only by his passion for the sport. Jake Griffin has shown an interest in racing since the young age of 3. Currently, his accomplishments include over 68 feature wins, 216 top 5 finishes, 1 regional championship, and 6 track championships. Jake was also crowned as the Open Wheel Modified Rookie of the Year at Spoon River Speedway in Canton, Illinois. He also finished 5th in the track's Open Wheel Modified points and 12th in the facility's Pro Late Model standings. 2014 proved to be a year of transition for Griffin as he made the move from being just a driver to also being a mechanic on his own race car. It was a learning curve for the 16-year-old, but he learned by leaps and bounds. By late in the season, the Quincy, Illinois competitor was able to make pro-level decisions on setup and was directly reflected in his on-track performance. Griffin visited Victory Lane on 4 different occasions during the course of the season, including a NASCAR Pro Late Model win at Lebanon I-44 Speedway in Lebanon, Missouri, on June 14th. The victory marked his second straight season to claim a NASCAR-sanctioned victory. In 39 events, Jake entered. He recorded 4 wins, 15 top fives, and 28 top 10 finishes. With another successful season in the rearview mirror, the young driver now looks intently to 2015. He recently celebrated his 16th birthday, which makes him eligible to run the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series events. He hopes to run as many as a dozen races in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. When not competing on pavement, Griffin plans to return to his roots to burn up tracks throughout the Midwest in his familiar Bob Pierce No. 8 Modified. We now welcome Jake to the program. Hello, how you
hey,
doing?
Thanks for having me on. Hey,
thank you very
for
much for coming.
I really appreciate it.
Why do you decide to become a race car driver?
You know, I just grew up around it, you know. It's what my whole family did. I started off on the sand drags, you know, my uncle, my dad, and all my cousins, and it's just all I've ever known, you know.
What are your hopes for the 2015 season?
You know, there's a lot in store for us for 2015. You know, we have between the asphalt and the dirt, the truck series and everything. As long as I do my job, I think we can go out and get a few wins. And the truck race, I think we can go out and get a top 10 if we do it right.
How many races do you run in the average year?
Well, you know, we run a lot, you know. I'd say in the average year, about like 50 to 75, but then I'd say a few seasons ago, we had a really big season between the dirt and the asphalt and everything else going on. We ran a total of about 150 races, and that was about our best season.
How are you able to balance school and racing?
You know, it's not easy. I'm lucky that most of the racing that goes on in the summer, so I don't have to worry about it. But as long as you have a good relationship between you and your teachers, it works out pretty good.
What's your ultimate racing goal?
You know, I say on a lot of my bio and stuff that I just want to go out there and just make a name for myself, you know, and be the best I can be in everything I do and excel with every opportunity I have. Be the best I can be.
My co-host has a couple questions for you.
Which do you prefer to race on, the asphalt or the dirt?
They're both really fun and really competitive. The dirt is obviously going to be more of the fun and you know, kind of a rush aspect to racing. But if you want to get anywhere in the racing field, I feel like you have to kind of transfer over into the asphalt side, and that's what we've done this year and oncoming years.
Of all of the cars that you've had the chance to drive, which do you think is your favorite?
Say again. Sorry about that.
You've driven a lot of cars. I looked at your website, you know. Yeah. So which do you think is your favorite one?
You know, I really enjoy running a dirt modified, which is what I'm going to run this year as well. I really enjoy running it. It's mainly because we can go anywhere in the country and be competitive with it. And it's just a feeling of being, you know, the door-to-door racing. You know, it's competitive as about every racing. And, you know, just the local dirt tracks is just where it's at.
Are there techniques that you can take or that you have taken from racing dirt that you can apply when you race on the pavement or the asphalt?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I've noticed in the past few years that it's a lot about the car control that you have in situations on the asphalt. And, like, when I first started going into asphalt, you know, everybody told me it's all about keeping the car as straight as possible, which it is, but in those situations when you have to get up on the wheel and get that extra little bit out of the car, you know, you got to kind of send it sideways a little bit and manhandle it. And I feel like the dirt racing has helped me out on that aspect of racing a lot.
If you could, would you, like, own your own racetrack?
I've been to so many racetracks. I've seen how different the racers and the fans can react to the promoters and the owners. And, you know, that's a lot of pressure to have on you. So if I could, I'd stay away from it. But at the same time, you know, Tony Stewart and Kenny Wallace and all those guys, I bet they didn't imagine they'd be owning their own racetracks also. So, you know, if I can stay away from that, that'd be the good thing. But if it came to it, I'd probably do it.
If you had the power to get fans, like, more involved into, you know, like, more involved rather than just sitting in the stands and watching the cars go by, what would you do to get them more involved?
You have to have the drivers interact with the fans. I feel like the more you can have a driver-fan interaction, and because fans love to see their favorite driver, you know, every week to get an autograph from him or talk to him or ask him how he's doing and everything else like that. I just feel like the more you involve the fans in the actual racing aspect of the side, the better.
Do you have any plans of racing, I can't think of the word. Never mind, scratch that question. So, what is the hardest part about, like, juggling, like, your, you know, off-track life with your on-track life?
I'd say the hardest part is just staying focused on the goal. You know, I wrestle in the off season for my school, and you know, having to stay focused on schoolwork between wrestling and racing is hard. Obviously, racing is the main priority and all that. So, just staying focused with everything I'm doing is probably the hardest part of it all.
Who's your favorite race car driver?
In NASCAR or just overall?
Yeah, in NASCAR and I suppose overall.
You know, there's a lot of them. You know, usually when I'm watching a NASCAR race with my dad or my buddies, I just want to see a good race. You know, I like the underdog always in a lot of situations. Like last year, you know, when it came down to the last race, I was going for Newman. Mm-hmm. And I got a little heat over that, but, you know, I like the underdog in situations like that.
Yeah, I think it would have been cool to have Ryan Newman win the race as well, especially considering the fact that he was the only one left in the chase who had won any races that season. So that would have been something.
Exactly.
Yeah. What are the races that you're planning on running? I know you're planning on running a race in March in the Camping World Series. Are there any other races you're ready to announce about that?
In the Camping World Truck Series, that is as far as it goes right now in the MB Motorsports,
okay.
Number 63. We are looking for sponsorship to kind of extend that schedule to more of the 9 races, like Phoenix and Gateway and stuff like that, but at the moment it is just the Martinsville race. Yes.
You hoping to make it down to Homestead for the end of the season as well?
I'd like to. We'll just have to see how everything works out, how the whole year works out, and hopefully we'll be able to get that done.
I know you're planning on coming down to Daytona for the race. You're not going to be competing in it, but which races are you looking forward to in Daytona?
Justin Jennings will be running the truck down there, and mm-hmm. I'll just be looking forward to supporting him. And actually, the week before, we're going to be running the Art Dirt Modified down in Volusia. We just announced that, so we'll be looking forward to that.
Cool. Yeah, I've never actually taken the time to go to the Dirt Modified races, the Volusia Speedway. I've gone to the New Smyrna Speedway for some of the asphalt stuff. Never made it out to the Volusia Speedway for any of the dirt stuff there.
Yeah, we made it down to New Smyrna the past two
mm-hmm.
years for Speed Weeks, and we've done pretty good down there, and we've kind of split up, you know, the Volusia and the New Smyrna, and this year we're just going to take a break from New Smyrna because we have all the PR stuff going on at Daytona, the meetings and everything, so
mm-hmm.
we're gonna focus on the dirt car and then supporting Justin and the crew in the truck race.
Cool. Well, I wish you lots of luck down there and hope that you're able to find enough sponsors to at least get into the 9 races in the Camping World Truck Series this year. And good luck with the rest of the season
it.
As well.
I appreciate
Thank
it.
You very
Thanks
much.
For having me on.
Yep. Thanks again, and have a nice evening. Once again, that was Jake Griffin. We'd like to thank him very much for coming on the program. He's got a great season lined up, and I'd advise you to go out and try and see him. He'll be in the trucks in March. He'll be at the, as you just announced, he'll be at the Volusia Speedway in his dirt car. They've got a ton of racing going on around Volusia County, both at New Smyrna Speedway and at Volusia. And it looks like that should be a really interesting thing. They did have a race actually at New Smyrna Speedway last weekend where a lot of the drivers who were competing at the Chili Bowl ended up going over there. They also had the guy who won the Chili Bowl, Rico Brew, who was there at the race competing. So was Clint Boyer, and Kyle Larson was hanging out there. I'm sure if he was able to, he would have wanted to jump in one of those cars as well, because he's just that good. He's having that sort of year, and all the best to him as well. We're hoping to have Kyle Larson on the program sometime in the future. I've contacted his PR people a couple of times, and they have expressed interest, so I'm looking forward to that. Should be good.
For some reason, I was thinking that Kyle Larson was Austin Dillon for a second, and then I was like, no. Yeah. One of those days.
Sounds like it. I'm looking forward to next week's show. Next week we've got the as aforementioned, we have Tristan Nunez and Tom Long from the Mazda Motorsports coming on the program. We also have a special guest who I'm going to introduce by having him introduce himself here.
Hi, this is John Hunter Nemechek from Nemco Motorsports, and you're listening to Thursday Night Thunder on the Speedway Digest Radio Network.
I've been trying to get John Hunter Nemechek or his father, Joe Nemechek, on the program for pretty much for the past 8 months, and I was finally able to convince him to convince John Hunter to come on the program next week, and it should be a great program.
That should be really interesting.
Yeah, I'd advise anybody who's interested to listen into the program next week. I'm going to be taking calls from the listeners to have their questions for John Hunter Nemechek, as well as from other guests. And if you're not interested in calling in, you feel that you might be a little bit nervous, a little bit gun-shy about getting your voice on the internet for everybody to hear forever and ever and ever and ever, you can submit your question on my Facebook page at facebook.com/SD Thursday Night Thunder, or simply by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar on facebook.com. I'm sure he'd be interested.
It will still be there forever.
It will. Forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. At least as long as there's one server plugged in somewhere in the world, it will still be there.
No pressure.
Exactly. None at all. When does your racing season start out there?
Practice officially starts in April, and then we run our first race May 2nd, but we're running, well, I am, my dad and my brother are going to stick with running the Mustang and Pinto,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going to be running two different series with the sprint car. I'm going to be running the Wesco series and with the NSRA series.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to, you know, combine those, but we're not going to run full-time. Like, we're not going to run both of those series full-time because, you know, we want to run the two series. And plus,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to be at Efrato Raceway for my brother, and plus we want to run here, too, and I'm going to have to announce here.
Mm-hmm.
So, but practice starts in April, and then the official season starts May 2nd. So, got a lot of work ahead of us.
You do. How do you feel about Tony Stewart starting to buy up some of the sprint car series?
You know, I think it could be, you know, good, just because Tony Stewart's got a lot of knowledge, so, you know, I think he can make them a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, I don't really know. But I think overall, I think it will be good, mostly because I think that will make more people out to support the sprint cars, you know, like sprint car series. So I think it'll be good for the sprint cars. How do you feel about it?
I think it'll be interesting. I think that the it'll definitely change the business a little bit. I'm pretty sure he might even be talking to the World of Outlaws, because there is a chance to reunify all the sprint car series under one unified leader, and I think that would be really good for the program.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone has to, you know, go out and, what he's doing, Tony Stewart is definitely the one to do it, just because he's got so much experience that, you know, it could be good. I think it'll definitely do more good than it will bad.
Mm-hmm. And I think that something really has to be done to try and get more people involved in the sport, get more people to show up to the races. We've discussed that numerous times on this program. But one of the good things about the two races I've been doing so far this year, about the Pro Winter Warm-Up, which isn't really technically a race, but whatever, and the Rolex 24 Daytona, is that they were both very well attended. The Pro Winter Warm-Up there at Palm Beach International, there wasn't a seat open in the grandstands. There were standing room only, or people along the fence and sitting on the back of their trucks watching down the track. And at the Rolex 24, which traditionally is a little bit lower attendance, they had more than 40,000 people there for that race. So that was pretty impressive. And hopefully that's a sign for things to come.
Maybe they're listening to us. Maybe they're like, oh my gosh, Thursday Night Thunder has really just brought light to the situation.
It has opened our eyes to the future of motorsports. That's what it is.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. It definitely was impressive. As I've discussed a few times before, the Daytona Rising project at the Daytona is something truly to be seen. And I think that it was surprising, because the Rolex 24, a lot of the people that normally go there are hanging out at the infield, where you can see the International Horseshoe and some of the turns and and go to the fan zone and all that. But I think there were actually more people in the grandstands, at least on the second day, than there was for the entire time that they had the race last year. Because you can see the whole speedway from the top of the, not even from the top, from like section 3 of the grandstands, you can see all the way around and not miss anything. From the very top, you can see the whole speedway plus the ocean and everything else. It's pretty impressive.
So, NASCAR is going to be starting. Who's your pick for the Daytona 500?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it'll be Kurt Busch, just because he's motivated now. He has a little bit of the outlaw thing still, and I think that the fact that he's had nothing but, let me say, weird press for the past few months with his girlfriend thing will motivate him to drive to the front in Daytona. Who do you think?
I'm not really sure. I'm almost thinking that maybe Carl Edwards. But I honestly, you know, the last Daytona 500 really surprised me. So, you know, I think this one could be just as surprising as the last one.
It could be. Hopefully it's a clean race. I know they've had some incidents in the past where it's been really messy. They had the one crash that was in the Nationwide, which this year will be Xfinity Series, where Kyle Larson ended up in his car ended up going through the wall, through the fence, and his engine pieces ended up in the grandstands and all that. That's not a very pretty picture, but at least this year there won't be that much of a threat because the grandstands are set further back from the wall now, and there's no way for people to even get that close to the fence in Daytona anymore, which is a good thing. It's a safety thing. It's all makes it a little bit better.
Yeah. What do you remember? I don't remember what race it was, but the one that injured like a lot of people, or was it like, I think it was like something like 13 people or something like that. They got like really mm-hmm. injured from it.
Yep.
Which race was that?
I think that was the Nationwide race at Daytona. I think that was, I think it was this year, this past year. I think it might have been the year before, but it was. Some of those people actually were in the hospital for an extended period of time, which isn't a very good thing.
No. That's so crazy. I mean, you know, like freak accidents happen and stuff, but
mm-hmm.
that was really insane.
And no matter how much safety stuff they do to the cars, it's not, as bad as it might seem, it's not all about the safety of the drivers at all. It's about the safety of the spectators. So the spectators don't feel safe coming to the racetrack. They won't go. No matter how much legalese stuff they put in the back of those tickets, if the people don't feel safe going to the racetrack, they're not going to go.
Yeah, which, you know, I mean, that's really understandable, but, you know, they have to think about, you know, everyone. Like, what was it? What am I thinking? That one race when Juan Pablo Montoya hit the jet dryer,
mm-hmm.
that could have been really dangerous. So, I mean, like, you know, thinking of keeping it safe for the spectators, but, you know, you have to keep it safe for the drivers and the officials, and you have to keep it safe for everyone. It can't just,
mm-hmm.
you can't just keep it safe for the spectators.
And did you see the, I posted on the Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder page a little bit about a petition that's going around now from one of the drivers of the Patron ESM car. We've had Randy Allen on the program in the past, who is saying that he thinks that the pit stops they have at Daytona and in the IMSA series in general aren't safe because they have the fuel and the tires all done and the driver changes all done at the same time. Personally, I don't think that's all that bad because they do that in other series as well, but it has to be done right. And what he's talking about is the fact that that some of the people end up leaving pit road without their seatbelts fastened and with the seats in the wrong position, with their helmets not totally done, with their Hans devices wrong. I think there should be at least some level of personal responsibility in that. So it's not the sanctioning body's responsibility to make sure that you're the one who's got your seatbelts on totally right before you leave pit road.
Yeah, well, and you know, like, I mean, obviously, I'm not a NASCAR driver, but I've done that. I've been in such a hurry that I'm like, okay, well, I'll just finish putting my gloves on when I get out there, or
mm-hmm.
I'll tighten my belt as soon as I get out there. And, you know, I mean, I've had those moments where I'm like, you know, caution, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, forgot to tighten my belt, so I'm tightening them really quick. So, I mean, you know, you have those moments where you're, like, in such a hurry that, you know, you think, oh, I'll do that when I get out there. But at the same time, I mean, if they're not, you know, like, You know, I mean, it's obviously a lot different. I mean, those guys are going a lot faster, and they crash quite a bit harder. So I can kind of agree, you know, like that, you know, like you said, it's a responsibility thing. Like, it's, you know, it's their responsibility to take care of that. But I can also kind of see, it, you know, it's like one of those things where you're in a hurry and you think, oh, I'll do it when I get out there. But, you know, that is dangerous. But, I mean, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Oh, my gosh.
A little bit. I also think that that part of the responsibility does go on the sanctioning body as well, because in NASCAR they have one official for every car, and as they go, you've got the official standing there watching the tire changes, watching the drivers making adjustments in the cockpit, watching the people and everything. In IMSA they have fewer officials. They have like one official for every five cars, and that one guy can't be there for everybody. And I think that they take advantage of that at times. And they say, if he's not looking, then I'm not going to worry about it. And that's not a good way to be either. So maybe if there were more officials, they'd be more apt to make sure that they're all set to go before they leave.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy to think that, like you just said, NASCAR has officials for every car, and, you know, they don't. I think that should kind of be a requirement, you know, like, because officials are going to catch, you know, even like, you know, lug nuts and stuff. Officials tend to catch that kind of stuff, and, you know, that's safety stuff too. So I think, you know, they should have one for every car too.
Yeah. They also mentioned the fact that they should shut off the engines during the pit stops. And I think that with the, even if you look basically at the amount of cars that end up leaving the race early, by shutting off the engine during the pit stop, you're going to put extra strain on the engine, that they end up with a ton more cars that leave early than just the, I think there were less than 20, but still nearly 20 cars. You'd end up with maybe half the field, and that wouldn't make for a very good race. There has to be an easier answer, but I don't think the petition that's circulating around is the answer. I think that it takes a little bit from both the drivers, the teams, and the officials to work out something that's a little bit better, because that's all they need is a little bit better, and a little bit better is better than what they have now. And what they have now is a ton better than what used to be, too. So it's all little steps.
Yeah, they'll get it figured out.
Because before they had the accidents that they had on pit road in NASCAR, they didn't even have people out there with helmets. And I think the helmets are a big step, and everything's all one step after another, and all those steps add up to a better series overall.
Yeah, but you have to remember, too, that, you know, nothing is perfect. So, you know, like the helmets, like you said, that was a big step. But, you know, now that they did that, they can't just, you know, stop. They have to continue, but, yeah.
Every time you fix a small thing, the thing that didn't seem that big is now the bigger thing.
Yes, exactly.
And on that note, we're going to end the program for tonight. We'd like to thank all of our guests, Cassie Gannis and Jake Griffin, for coming on the program. Next week, we're going to welcome John Hunter Nemechek, as well as the two of the Mazda prototype drivers. Be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder, as well as the other shows on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at SpeedwayDigestRadioNetwork.com. You can also check out the show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar. I also invite you to read the articles covering all aspects of motorsports at SpeedwayDigest.com. Also, I'd like to thank Michael Mullally for coming on the program again and helping me out with questions for the drivers. And I look forward to hearing from her again next week.
Have a good night.
Thank you for listening. I look forward to seeing you again in the Thunderdome.